No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in and join in the discussion by calling at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBSRADIOONE. We're going to start out tonight with our guest. We have two guests tonight. The first one is Laura Fuchs. She's a high school teacher. She teaches civics in the District of Columbia. And this week, Laura has participated in a constitutional convention here in Washington, D.C. We've held this convention to try to write a new constitution for the District of Columbia so that we can get a ballot initiative put forward in November, which would demand statehood for the District of Columbia through a method called the Tennessee Plan, which actually makes a demand of Congress. And the process has been somewhat controversial, to tell you the truth. And we've invited Laura to come on tonight and talk to us about it, because she's one of the people that I think has had some concerns. I won't talk for her, but I think she's had some concerns about the process. So we want to get her on, and we want to find out how she felt about the whole process. But before we get Laura on, let me introduce Maria Sanchez, my co-host. Maria, are you there?
I'm here, Michael. Thank you so much for that. And happy Father's Day.
Thanks. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that this has been a little rushed, but we've been under the gun to do this constitutional convention. Laura, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Let me just ask you as we start out. Maria and I are also going to talk about Maria, after we talk to Laura for a while, we'll talk about the primaries and a few other things that have happened this week before we bring our second guest, Phil Portlock, on. But Laura, let me start with you and ask you how you feel about the process that's gone on.
I feel like we're rushing something that we have no right to rush, and that it maintains the power of the status quo, and that, speaking of primaries, people are not happy with the status quo. People want change in D.C., and not just at the national level, but at the local level, because we have so little representation even in our own local government compared with other comparable areas, and that calling this a convention is insulting, because we're non-voting delegates trying to get a non-voting delegate in Congress the right to vote. And that just seems very ironic, and that we'd call this democratic when it's so clearly not democratic. I mean, it's frustrating, because I did not elect the five members of the commission. I mean, no offense, but I did not elect the five members of the commission to write a constitution. I elected them to serve the jobs that were written, in our current charter and in our current laws. And so I don't see anywhere where writing a constitution is one of those things. So I find it troubling that this is how we're doing it, and troubling to the point where it's hard for me to support this process because of it. And my hope is that we can remove the Constitution from the ballot. We can vote on statehood, and then we can move forward from there. But I'm worried that this is going to fail. Or if not fail, it's going to have a very low turnout because people have not been included in the process. And when you're not included, you opt out.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with most of that. First of all, the point you make about incumbents certainly has been true in the primary election this time. We saw three incumbents out of five, I believe. We saw three of them lose their seats in the Democratic primary. So, there's certainly, I think that it is certainly a call for change in the District of Columbia. The only thing that I might argue with is that it's undemocratic. I think that it could be more democratic, and it's certainly not the typical way to have a constitutional convention, as you point out.
Well, it's not a convention. It was a constitutional town hall.
Okay.
It's not a convention.
Okay.
Is there a distinction between that for you, Laura, why you don't want to use the term convention?
I mean, when I teach history, you know, like I teach history and government, words, especially legal words, have meaning. And conventions imply voting delegates present who get to participate on an equal playing field. Right? And, I mean, I've never heard of a convention with five voting members. That's just not something I've ever heard of before. So I teach history for a living. I studied government in college. Like, this is what I spend most of my time thinking about. Like, so I don't, it's frustrating as a citizen to be told that because I can comment, that makes me a voting delegate, or that makes me a delegate. It doesn't. It makes me a citizen, because citizens can always comment on things. And I've been commenting on laws, on budgets, on bills in the city council for the past 7 years, I would say. And that, I know, is not an epic amount of time, but I'm very active. And I'm the chair of the Washington Teachers Union's Committee on Political Education. I have been for the past 2.5 years. I campaign with candidates. I campaigned with Robert and Trayon White, who both won their primaries. And I do all this and receive very little results for my work. And I'm in a lot of different community coalitions who continuously obey the process and the rules of the game, as we're told, and watch as the powers that be listen to us, quote unquote, and then do whatever it was they wanted in the first place. And I understand that listening doesn't mean that I get my way every time. And I understand that this is democracy. Like, there's lots of different points of view. People have different wants and needs. But it's pretty consistent that people who live and work east of the river get shut out of our current government, and that we're not treated on equal playing field with people who have a lot of money, time, and access, and that government employees in particular get treated very poorly by our current city government. And, I mean, we're getting pretty tired of it. And the idea that we would enshrine the Home Rule Act, something that was not, to my knowledge, even written by us, and make that our constitutional law of the land, I mean, that just seems ludicrous to me. Like, this is an opportunity to make a change, and here we are enshrining the status quo in a foundational, fundamental document. And the idea that we just change it, I mean, it hasn't changed so far. I don't see why 13 members would be willing to give up that kind of power. I mean, it just really blows my mind that this is something that we think is a good idea. And, you know, I tried to convince a lot of my friends to come out, kind of the millennial crowd. We're kind of the upper age of the millennial crowd. I mean, I was on Twitter. I was on Facebook. I would see them in person. I would be begging people to come out. And even though they weren't necessarily doing anything, they didn't want to, because people see this as dead on arrival.
Look, first of all, let me explain to our listeners, if you don't know what Laura's referencing here, the fact that there's a constitution being written, and the first draft of the constitution takes a 13-member city council and makes them a unicameral legislature. There are a lot of people that have a problem with this, myself included. The if we have a 13-member unicameral legislature in a city with a $13 billion budget and a population of 675,000 people, we will have the smallest legislature by far of any state in the union. In fact, Vermont and Wyoming. which are approximately the same size as the district. Actually, they're smaller than the district. Have legislatures with 90 and 45 people. So the district would be by far the smallest. And when Laura says it enshrines the existing power structure in the district, that's exactly what the initial draft does. It takes the 13 members who are now elected to the city council and the mayor and automatically makes them delegates to the House, if that's what you want to call the unicameral legislature, the House, and makes the mayor governor. And a lot of people have had problems with this, and I have problems with it too, but we haven't finished writing the Constitution. I would point that out.
I mean, when you say we, right, like in a constitutional convention, notes are taken and published, debates are held out in the open. The people who are chosen to be a part of writing that draft are chosen by the people. They're not just 12 lawyers who I can't even get the names for unless I show up and ask directly. Like, I know that these aren't necessarily being kept secret, like in an insidious way, but at the same time, information is not accessible. I don't have my version of the Federalist Papers explaining some of the decisions being made. Some of the decisions being made seem to be kind of like secretive back deal doors, like especially on the education front and the school board. Like, and I know I come across as a conspiracy-laden type person, but I've been working too long with D.C. public schools and the mayoral control system, and I know what happens in this city when we hand power to a mayor and have a legislature that's too small to check them. Nobody takes responsibility.
Before, Michael, you ask, I wanted to find out, Laura, what is your take on D.C. getting statehood? Are you for it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I come from a state.
Okay.
Well,
but I can't give up the right to a fair local government. Like, honestly, I believe local government is far more important than national government to my daily life.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Daily lives. And a lot of people don't pay attention to their local government. And our local government is one of the more corrupt ones out there and does not have very good sunshine laws, has terrible campaign finance laws, allows people to hold two jobs. I mean, there is some really not good stuff in our local government right now, and it's because of the structure. I really think that's why this happens, because there's just too few people, which makes it way too easy for lobbyists and people with a lot of money and time to take advantage of this system, because you don't need to convince a lot of people, and it's hard to form coalitions in a government this size. And I mean, there's just a lot of things that are pretty big issues, and the idea that we try to rush through something that's, I mean, a constitution should have meaning. It does to me. I teach it to my kids. Like, it has meaning. Like, the first thing we always say, go back to the constitution. Like, we have a limited government for a reason. We write our constitutions down for a reason. And, you know, it's my job to teach that to our students. And the idea that we would be treating this constitution like a throwaway is kind of offensive to someone who their livelihood is teaching civics.
Well,
like,
let me say
it shouldn't be a throwaway.
First of all, I think you're partially right about the way the government structured. I think another problem we have is that many of the people with money and power in our city are focused on the federal government, because this is the seat of the federal government. The average person in my ward, Ward 3, could tell you infinitely more about Hillary Clinton than they could about Muriel Bowser. I think that's another problem that we have. We just had an election, and you talk about them throwing out incumbents, that's true, but but we only had 21 in the capital of America. We had 21.5% of the registered voters show up to vote in the only election that counts in the district. Only the Democratic primary counts.
But I think, I think people are making a rational decision not to engage in a government that refuses to truly engage them. And like this constitutional convention is a classic case in point. There were not meetings in all 8 wards. The meetings that were held in Ward 8, both were at awkward times comparatively. We had a meeting on a Friday night. I mean, like, we're not really doing our best effort here to engage the public. And when, like,
I agree with you 100%.
People have to see the government to want to be involved in it. And we keep, this is what happens every time. Everything
I understand
is done in
that.
This manner.
And just let me say that in theory you're right, but the one thing that I would argue with is that you say this, and then we see that more people have turned up for the constitutional town hall meetings than have shown up for statehood for a very long time. And this is something that I have a very hard time dealing with, because I believe and many things that you're saying, but you know, imagine I've been doing this for 10 years. Imagine teaching a class for 10 years and having the same 7 students show up every class for 10 years, and then all of a sudden somebody does something and 35 students show up for the class. That's what's going on here, and that's the one thing that I'm having a hard time with. I agree with much of what you're saying, but I'm having a hard time stepping in the middle of the process, a process which I think you fully understand our delegation doesn't control because of the structure of the government. But I'm having a hard time because I see more attention being paid to statehood now than I've seen being paid in a long time. And maybe part of what I'm saying is that, you know, any publicity is good publicity. We see 2 articles in the opinion section on Washington Post today. Both of them agree with
you. They're both negative.
Right. They're both negative. That's absolutely correct. But we're out there. We're talking about something that doesn't really get talked about enough in the District of Columbia. And that's my only problem. I keep on drifting over to your side saying, yeah, this isn't, I agree with you, it shouldn't be called a convention, it's not a convention.
But that doesn't solve anything by just renaming it.
Right, it doesn't solve anything. But the attempt to get this on the ballot, and a few things that we need to point out that haven't been mentioned, is one, we have a constitution. So we're not writing a constitution, we're rewriting a constitution. Second of all, the constitution that we have has never been approved by the people. It was written by the city council, and it's part of the New Columbia Admission Act that's now before Congress. So it's not any more democratic. The existing constitution is no more democratic than the constitution that we're making here. And third and foremost,
are you referring to the 1987 constitution?
The 1987 constitution was a rewrite of the 1982 constitution,
right,
which was actually passed by the people, but the city
right.
council changed it substantially, including all the things that seem to bother you, like the size of the 1982 constitution calls for a legislature that has 40 members, and the 1987 constitution reduces that to 25, and now of course it's being reduced again to 13. I agree with you; it's not a particularly democratic process. But the Constitution can be rewritten, and the one thing that I'm trying not to do is to interfere with the process to the extent that we don't get this on the ballot in November.
I mean, I don't think the Constitution should be on the ballot. I don't.
You said that was because it was too rushed, Laura. Is that why?
Yep.
I'm wondering, it's been 34 years.
And like the idea that someone could just listen to me, quote unquote, and maybe take what I say into consideration. I mean, please, I can't vote for a constitution that way, especially as it stands. Well, that's another thing. But, like, I mean, I don't trust the draft to be much better, honestly, because I have not seen this government stand up and do anything of value in a long time.
Well, let me also say that in that sense, you will get a chance to vote on the Constitution. You didn't get a chance to vote on the 1987 Constitution. Nobody got a chance to vote on the 1987.
But it kind of sucks that, like, we're being put, like, people who, we love statehood. I've been teaching, you know, D.C. history to students now since I started in D.C. public schools. And I am fully committed to statehood. You know, I've taken my kids to, like, lobby days, and, you know, they do a big statehood project. Like, it's a big part of what we do in our public schools, and we try to get kids interested in it, and it usually succeeds. Like, I mean, they have a lot of reasons to be interested in it, and it is a great unit to get to teach. But we're putting these groups who want real democracy in this position where we want to support statehood, and we can't support the way it's being done. And well, we're kind of in a rock and a hard place then, because we don't want to fight against statehood, but we can't vote for this Constitution.
Well, is some Constitution better than no Constitution? Draft.
Well, I think that's an option, Maria, because we do have a Constitution. So it's this Constitution or the old Constitution. But let me also say that as your representative for 10 years on this issue, we live in a city of 675,000 people, and when I go to a rally to give a speech, 150 people show up, and of the 150 people, I know 50 of them by name because of the people that come to everything, sometimes even more than that. So that's a big problem for us. Statehood is not a big issue in the District of Columbia, and that is one of our major problems, is that it's not a big enough issue because we have to make the demand. I know you've heard me say this many times during this process that
that takes real on-the-ground engagement. This process is not going to achieve what you hope it will achieve by itself. It takes true grassroots on-the-ground engagement. And people
There's none of that going on.
Isn't that what you're elected to do? To organize?
Yeah.
To orchestrate?
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean,
whose responsibility is that then? I'm sorry?
I mean, I can't blame my students for doing poorly on a test. I have to take responsibility, right? If they're not interested and motivated, that's on me to change up how I'm doing things and, you know, hit the ground again the next term and try again.
Well, I've got to tell you something.
But I don't, you know, our government is very divorced from the people.
Okay, if you're going to talk truth to power, then let's talk truth, okay? I've been the senator for 10 years, and I make offers all the time to come and lecture in schools, and I've never been once invited by a D.C. public school to say anything. I had to start my own website called Teach Democracy so that we can get the word out to students. So,
it's
all of our responsibilities.
It's already offered as a curriculum, Michael. That's what Laura's saying.
No, it's really not. It's not.
The way I teach it, they definitely do campaigns in our school. We've written petitions. They go door to door. I mean, I am invested in grassroots movements. That's what I do. That's why I brought 4 students. That was the most that could fit in my car. I don't have a van, right? Like, it's very hard for us to get around town, especially on the metro. And my kids are in Ward 7. I personally do what I can, and I know always that I can do more, but our government as a whole tends to ignore people and call 1 or 2 focus groups or town halls engagement, and it's a bit of a joke. And I mean, that's how it's been since I've been here, and even when people in Ward 7 in particular, because that's the ward I work in, it's the ward I do all my community work in, they were gonna, I'll give you an example. They were gonna close River Terrace in elementary school in Ward 7.
No, well.
We did everything, and I mean, we did it in force. I mean, packed hearing rooms, testimony, research, lawyers. We followed every single rule, and that school got closed anyways. More than any other school. And which school stayed open? The schools in Ward 2 and Ward 3. So we have a group of people who have been systematically disenfranchised by their own government repeatedly, and that's just in the few years I've been here. I mean, this history goes back a lot further, and we will have to play a different game if we are really attempting to engage the whole city in this effort. And I don't see our current government being willing to do that. And it kind of reaches the point where people give up on their government, and they, you know, they're opting out. This is not just a lack of civic engagement. I talked to people throughout the ward, Ward 8, when I was campaigning for Tran White. They do want to be engaged, but they just didn't see how their vote could possibly matter. And I think getting statehood can help, but, like, we can't just assume that we can rush this through and hope that it works. I mean, it's just, we have to be doing the real grassroots groundwork, and I don't think, you know, there's groups out there that are trying to do it. I know they formed a coalition, but, like, it's not truly getting done. It's not on
the street. No, it's not getting done, and that's the problem. And I've been working at it for 10 years for free, full-time for the past 5 years, put $50,000 of my own money into it because these people won't even pick up my expenses. So I'm not sure what more I can do for it. And
well,
I've seen this generate.
We've got a caller. Trisha is on line 3.
Yeah, let's see what the caller has to say. Excuse me, Laura. Go ahead. Trisha, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. It's Trisha Brown. What's up?
Oh, Trisha Brown, my daughter, calling to wish me a happy Father's Day, I assume.
I am. I'm calling to wish you a happy Father's Day.
Thanks.
And I appreciate all you've done for me.
Oh.
So
aww,
I just wanted to make sure that I shared that publicly with the great people you're speaking with today.
You're sweet. Well, thanks. Do you have a question for either Laura or Maria?
I'm kind of lost on the conversation. I kind of missed everything that was going on.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Talking about important stuff.
And you're in Chicago, so we don't care about
Chicago.
Your opinion. No, I'm only kidding.
We have Taboo on line 4.
Okay, good. Let's
all
have
right.
Taboo. Thanks, honey. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead, Taboo.
Hi, yes. Thank you, all of you, for your great work. But, Laura, I'm just wondering, Senator Brown had mentioned, you know, earlier in the conversation that this is the nation's capital, and I just wanted your opinion as to whether or not the land given back to Virginia, should that be considered part of the district? Was that illegal? Can Congress just do anything it wants? That was a contract. Did it not go against the contract clause? Because I think we need to start there, because I don't know if our boundaries, we need to first start with the basics. And your boundaries. Is that an issue with you?
It's not one that I know that the land was given back to Virginia, but I don't know much about the legal ramifications of that, personally.
Yeah, and,
okay,
and
well,
you know,
what about
that was a political decision. We understand that wasn't a legal decision. That all revolved around some powerful people in Virginia, fearing that the District of Columbia was going to end slavery, and I guess we should all be proud of the fact that the District of Columbia was the first place in America to end slavery. At the federal level.
We're political slaves now. You got various forms of slavery. When you're being under the control of someone else. We as political slaves under control of Congress right now, but I think we need to establish some basics, some ground rules. What area? What are we talking about? Let me ask this question and just put that one on the table. Does consent of government mean anything? In other words, does the government have to have our consent to do anything?
Well, I
mean,
think
they tacitly get it through the vote, right?
Yeah, I think it depends on who you talk to. I don't know what Laura would say about that. I would say that yes, in a democracy, even in a Republican former democracy, they should. But I agree with Laura. I mean, this government, to say that we don't have corruption in this government would be wrong, because we do have a lot of corruption. Just the corruption we've gotten rid of in the last 2 years is mind-boggling. And this process does shut a lot of people out. It's one of the reasons that we invited Laura here today, because we knew how she felt, and we think this is important commentary that needs to be said. But, yeah, I think that you should have the consent of the governed. Certainly Thomas Jefferson said that all power, the legitimate right to govern, flows from the consent of the governed. I guess the answer to that is that's what it should be. Not always that way, though.
Well, see, and this goes back to the basic guidelines. We have corrupt government right from the get-go, and I think before we should begin trying to build institutions within the government, we need to make sure the government has its guidelines and its control properly. When we look at, it's my understanding that the government is designed for one thing, and that is to protect our basic rights. These are certain rights that cannot be taken from us. And those rights, liberty, the right to life and liberty, you have a right to participate in government. And that's something that cannot be taken from it. And that's why I think we need to focus on the fundamentals of this government. When they talk about in all powers whatsoever, that's law that one of the major reasons the colonists broke away from the mother country, because of that one law in all cases whatsoever. And that's what they do here on D.C. It's total bad government.
Well, that's true, and we're trying to end it. Let me ask, do we have Phil Portlock with us?
Yes.
Phil, come on.
Yeah, I'm here, Senator Brown.
Okay, Phil, I don't know if you've been listening to the things that Laura have said, but I'd like to get your impression. Now, Phil is a longtime advocate. He's with a group called Citizens United for D.C. State, or Neighbors United, I'm sorry, for D.C. statehood.
Yeah.
And what's your impression of the convention or the town halls, this whole process, Phil? What's your impression of what's been going on?
Well, I think based on, I think Brother Taboo is there too, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
hey doing,
Taboo.
Phil?
Yeah. I think, you know, for so long, I know over these recent years, we have just tried to piecemeal this thing with delegate having the right on the floor and full representation on decisions of Congress and the voting power. And I think we reached the point where we realized that nothing was permanent there. You know, an administration could come in one day, as we saw in 94, and everything changed, you know, when the whole Gingrich Congress came in. And so I think we realized that that is not permanent. And then we started really looking at the fact that we're wasting a lot of time dealing with Congress, asking for a little bit of this and a little bit of that, taking a part of Utah and all representative from Utah. And I think we just reached the point, let's go for the marbles. And statehood is the only way to achieve something that's permanent. And that's where we are now. That's where we've been since, the early 80s, when we first had the first convention and the first drafting of the first constitution and statehood constitution. And I thought about this when I found out right in April. I think it was on Emancipation Day, Tax Day, we were standing right in on Freedom Plaza, and we knew that the mayor was meeting over at the Willard Hotel, and later that afternoon, I know I got wind of what had taken place over there as far as this constitutional convention. And I thought about it, and I said, gee, that's kind of sudden. And it didn't seem like it was something that had brought more important people into the process, but nevertheless, I said, let's see what it is, and let's just see if we can do something. in this short period of time. So I support, generally I support the effort that we're making because it's long overdue.
Thanks.
It's long overdue.
And let me ask
Laura,
if the fact that we can rewrite the Constitution once we become a state and we can have a regular constitutional convention, if we write that into the Constitution, does that in any way ameliorate some of the misgivings you have?
I mean, it makes me more comfortable, yes, if it was in the Constitution as it stands. But, I would just prefer not voting on the Constitution at all.
And if we proceed
along... And then doing it up front the right way.
If we proceed along this track, this is something that I'd really like to ask both you and Phil. And I'm sorry for cutting you out, Maria. Jump in here anytime. But if we do proceed along this track, will you vote against it if it appears on the ballot, Laura?
Well, don't I get to vote on four questions?
Yes.
Well,
but I think you have to agree to all four of them in order to the way I understand it is a four-part question, but I don't think you can disagree with any part of it and agree with the basic question, which is one of the things that bothers me. I got to be honest with you.
It would really depend on the language of the Constitution, but it'd be very difficult for me.
Okay.
How about you, Phil?
I mean, if it was saying that we had to have a proper constitutional convention and laid out, but I mean, like, I don't know, it would have to lay out something about how those rules would be determined, because we've already seen what happens when our current government called the constitutional convention.
Right.
You'd have to be pretty carefully worded. I don't know. I'd be very concerned.
So Laura, since I didn't, I just came in, what are your apprehensions, or what are your concerns, and what's causing you to feel the way you do?
I just feel conventions should involve elected delegates. You have a vote, not five people who I didn't vote for to write a constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that
I'm sorry, Phil. That I think that's a really valid point. Because
it
goes to the fundamental even before a pen hits a piece of paper.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I didn't know. I just heard that you, I just heard your response at first, and I wanted to just hear what your objections were. Yeah,
and it is a valid point. Let me point out that all five members of the commission, however, are elected, although they may have not been elected for a specific purpose.
Just not elected to write a constitution.
And you should know, as part of the Tennessee plan, the Tennessee Constitution was written in 3 weeks, and it was written by people that were elected, elected to the convention, but they were also the people that ran the state. So the territorial governor, for example, was head of the Constitutional Convention, and Thomas Jefferson said it was the least imperfect and most Republican document he had ever seen. And I think that
I wouldn't be looking to our founding fathers, half of whom were slave owners, as like the paragons of democracy.
They weren't the paragons of democracy.
We've come a long way since then, I would hope.
Well, they weren't the paragons of democracy, but they were the big mamma jammas of constitutions. I mean, the American Constitution has been used by 17 other countries, so it is a pretty solid document, even though these guys, didn't like women, didn't like African Americans, didn't like Native Americans. You know, there were a lot of people they excluded from our government, and I agree. But they were pretty
Senator
good
Brown,
at the Constitution.
I think you must point out that the great document that Jefferson copied from was the Virginia Declaration of Rights, and would say you are born free. And that, I think, is probably the greatest document of all time written, and the man doesn't get credit. And those pro-slavery people did not like it, and they changed it. But it was written when we're born free. That's how it was intended. Laura, you probably are familiar with the book, The City of Magnificent Intentions. This, it really was intended to... was a, intended to be a great place, and that's what I like for it to be. And it, we, the one thing that I didn't get to say at the end there, didn't testify because they cut me off while I had signed up, and they said they had cut the list off before I signed up, but I didn't know that. And really, but the bottom line, I would like to say this. I think the mayor, I think we should give her credit for her intentions of getting this thing back out here, even though the process isn't, you know, what it should be. But the one thing that I see her trying to do, it looks like, using similar to an executive privilege, because she knows it's an injustice, and I think we have to give her 100% effort for trying to make sure that we are treated as full citizens and with our statehood. You know, so that's the one great thing of all of this. I think, you know, even though the process might be flawed and everything, I think of all of this, I think we all, in my opinion, should at least give her credit for trying to make sure, use her all her power to get statehood for us.
Well, I have to agree, but I also agree with Laura. You know, I hate to be the politician here and play both ends against the middle and sound like I'm hiding behind everybody, but it's true. I think that, that Laura's right, that this has been an undemocratic process. Just so you know, our delegation, which is at the center of the process, we make up three-fifths of the votes that will decide on the Constitution, have not really even been much involved in the process. This has been put forth by the mayor's office and pushed by the mayor's office. But then I also agree with you, Taboo, that we're moving the process forward, as flawed as it may be. So that's the dilemma for me. Yeah. Phil, do you have anything you want to add?
Yes, I think the thing that I really am, that the biggest concern that I have, I realize the process, as we've said, is not perfect. But one of the biggest things that I have is the is our citizenry, and that is, how do we even begin to educate and motivate our citizens that this is something that they need to, if they don't necessarily agree with everything, that they understand what this whole thing is about. I'm not talking about the process, because most of the citizens won't be involved with the process, the nuts and bolts. But the idea that we have a, we just finished an election, and I'm just looking at the turnout, the poor turnout in these elections don't speak a lot about our interest or commitment to the political system, period. And if we're going to put something forward, we're going to put something forward that Congress will look at, the president will look at, and we have an election in November, and we see 20, 25, 30% of the citizens that even participated. What does that say?
Well, Laura, what does that
say?
What
does that say about our interest, even our interest in the process, our interest in statehood? I guess that's the only thing that makes me concerned about it, making me feel that it's whether we have the time to educate the community to what this thing is all about.
What do you think, Laura?
I mean, I think that until our government chooses to truly engage its population and, like, actually give us not just a voice at the table where we don't actually have any power and can be listened to if the people in power so choose, there's not much incentive to be involved. So you can go to hearing after hearing. You can go to town hall after town hall. But if no one up there is really listening, if they're just kind of nodding or even making snide comments, which, I mean, what's happening during this town hall about it all, or like when one of my students asked a question, was basically talked down to, I mean, like, why bother, right? Like, so why engage?
But who is doing the talking down?
We have to give people reason to engage.
Yeah,
who is doing the talking
down to your student? I'd like to know that.
Who is doing the talking down to?
The other shadow senator?
Oh, he did. Well, I'm sorry. I missed that, but that's unacceptable. And, you know, this is the great liability that we have, folks. The great liability is if we put this thing on the ballot, and this is the thing that scares me the most, and it doesn't get 70% or better approval.
That's what I'm talking about. That's
right.
My concern.
And that's the great liability. Do you think there's a chance of that? Laura, Phil, do you think we stand the chance of putting this on the ballot? Because I think the conventional
wisdom... I think it'll get the approval you want. I think it'll get low turnout.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'll get the approval you want.
Yeah.
So it's 70% of those folks that actually vote? Not a percentage of the population that can vote. It's 70% of the people who actually show up to the polls.
Well, the reason I put out 70%, Maria, is because I fight with the people on Capitol Hill all the time, and the marijuana initiative got 65% approval. And one thing we don't want is we don't want a 60% approval rating so that the people on Capitol Hill can say to us, look, these people care more about smoking marijuana than they care about state.
I see.
I think the thing is, with this
constitutional writing being so insular, being kind of closed off, not being advertised properly, not really doing any true outreach, not being, having two-thirds of the meetings in Upper Northwest, like, these are things that turn people off and that make people uninterested or, frankly, just don't straight up know what's going on. And until we really want to engage the population and not just kind of passively listen and just let people testify for 3 minutes, which can be very intimidating in front of large groups, like, we have to rethink how we're engaging people. Just like I can't lecture at my classroom and then, like, tell a kid to, like, stand up and recite a poem for 30 minutes. Like, that's not, it doesn't work that way anymore. Like, times have changed. Engaging people has changed. We have to get with the program as a city. And we have to meet why should the people support the government when the government doesn't seem to support the people? I mean, I wish they wouldn't make that choice. I would say change the government, like, take it down. But, most people, unfortunately, don't really think that way. They want to see a clear connection between their vote and something happening, and too often their vote doesn't seem to have much meaning, even at the local level, and they start to opt out. They don't have any interest.
Well, does the government have legitimacy? Let's go back to the consent of government. In 1788-89, when they came up with, the Articles of Confederation was our first constitution, right?
Yes.
Did they have authority to abolish it and institute slavery as they did? Because if you have bad government, then if it's bad law, then it's no law at all, is it not? I'm trying to get back to the basic guidelines. When they said, when the federal government said that they can rule us in any way that they want, first of all, I think that's the bad government. We need to deal with that first. Is that not an issue?
Taboo, unfortunately, for 200 years, we've been doing that. For 215 years, we fought this. You understand that. We've been to court about it and had the Supreme Court say that equal protection doesn't apply to us because we're. I mean, they didn't say exactly that, but that's what it becomes, because the Constitution gives the Congress the right to exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over the
Constitution?
We fought it on legitimacy terms for a long time, and now what really has come, I think, in the final analysis from the court and from other places that we have to go for redress, is that this is a political problem that must be handled politically. Your point is well taken, but it's a problem for us. We have to handle this politically.
Well, let's look at the problem. The problem is, you cannot solve a problem until you identify the problem. When they came up, they being the federal government, came up with a 1789 constitution without consent of the people, that is a problem. Because prior to that, slavery was on its way out. This slavery was put back in 1789 Constitution, and this is where the problem really began.
Right.
So let's focus on the problem.
Right. Let me, since we're running out of time here, let me let everybody make one last comment. Laura Stowe, do you have one last thing you'd like to say?
I mean, I just hope that, you know, the Constitution as it stands would hopefully be removed from the questions that are on the ballot so that we can have the time to properly do this right the first time instead of having to just write in that we're going to fix it later. That would be my ideal. I guess next best would be fix it later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bill, how about you?
Yeah, okay. I'm listening to Laura, and I'm thinking about the idea of what if we say do it later, will we have that in our minds to really do it later? In other words, you can say, I'll take what you give me now, and we will revise something later. How do we keep that momentum going that we will say, let's get together after November, and whatever we didn't do, we're going to correct it? And that could be a problem, not in terms of getting something done, but actually having people say, who is going to make whatever is lacking workable? You know, when you talk about something sometimes and you say, I'm going to put that off now so we can maybe revise something later, sometimes later never comes.
Well, and that's a good point, because we do have a Constitution. The Constitution from 1987
is
connected to the statehood bill that now sits in Congress. And you're right, until we focused attention on the new Constitution, there really hasn't been much talk about the Constitution.
Yes.
So we will put, you know, I will fight to put that clause in the Constitution that we revisit it
with
the regular Constitutional Convention in 3 years after we become a state. But will people participate in that?
With elected delegates.
Of elected delegates, absolutely. Look,
Can I say one thing, though? Three words. The real question, what nobody's talking about, the unsaid is, what nobody's talking about is really statehood for who, and nobody's talking about it because that's an undertone to a lot of what is going on. Statehood for who?
Yep.
Well, that's a legitimate question, too. Well, we've pretty much run out of time here, so let me thank Laura Fuchs for coming on. Thank you for being a teacher. My wife's a teacher. It is, in my opinion, one of the most honorable professions out there.
Yes,
and thank you for being engaged in this process, Laura. I think you're an important voice, and I hope that you will continue to be engaged. Phil Portlock, I've known you for several years to be involved in this process, and I appreciate everything you've done. Laura talks about doing things at the grassroots and how important that is, and you are a very important grassroots player. You and Josh Burtz have done just wonderful things in your ward. Taboo, you're always there to be part of the discussion, and you've been involved in this movement since the very beginning. So thanks, all three of you, and as this process continues, I hope we can get you to come back on the show later in the process and have more of a narrative on how you think we've progressed.
Senator Mike, we thank you for all you've done too.
Well, thanks. And Maria Sanchez, who I blocked out, please have the last word.
I just want to thank all of you for having skin in the game, regardless of where you stand, because if it weren't for folks like you, nothing would get done. And it's awesome, the activism and everything that you are doing to help make your point of view get solved.
Amen.
Amen.
We'll see you next week, America. Thank you.
Thanks,
so
everybody.
Much.
Thank all of you.
Thank you.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, America.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day.
Give the people their right to vote.